أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد. اللهم اخرجنا من ظلمات الوهم وأكرمنا بنور الفهم. اللهم افتح علينا أبواب رحمتك وانشر علينا من خزائن علومك يا أرحم الراحمين. اللهم علمنا ما ينفعنا وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما. My brothers and my sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. On the 2nd of Muharram, on the 61st year after Hijrah, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was blocked from going to Kufa by Hur ibn Yazid al-Riyahi. And the Imam and his family kept trying to divert their way to get to Kufa until they reached a point, they reached a land. And the Imam asked the people, and he asked his companions, "Where are we right now?" And they answered him with many names. And when he heard the name Karbala, he knew where he had landed. First, he went to the owners of the land. He went to find them, the first thing that he did. He told his family that we're going to camp here, so stay here. But he first had to speak to the people who owned the land. And so they came to meet him. And the Imam told them, "I wish to purchase this land from you." But once the Imam purchased it, he bought it for whatever price they demanded. He paid for it with his own money. Then the Imam gave it back to them as a gift. He told them, "Now that I have purchased this land from you, I wish to give it back to you. This is a gift from me, but it's a gift from me on a condition. There may be a battle that occurs on this land. If I and my family are killed in this land and are buried in this land, there are going to be people that will come to visit our graves. You must promise me that whoever comes to visit my grave, you must host for 3 days, and you must feed. You must feed my zuwar, and you must host them for 3 days. If you accept this condition, I give you your land back." And they accepted. And so he gave them the land back. See, this is the grace and foresight of the Imam. He did this for many reasons. First of all, his honor would not allow him to randomly eat, sleep, and pray in someone else's land for several days, let alone to have a battle and allow his blood to lay on that land. And the foresight of the Imam knew about, of course, Islamic law, as in, it is forbidden in Islam to dig up the grave of any person who is dead, except in the situation when that land does not belong to the person, as in Ard Maghsuba. If this land, the owner of the land says, "I don't want this person to be buried in my land," then it's allowed to dig the grave up. Unfortunately, there might be some people who wish to do that. The Imam had foresight. He never wanted anyone to have a reason or excuse that they could dig up his grave. So he brought the land. And now with honor, he could stay in the land. And then he gifted the land, due to his generosity, back to the people. He came back to his family and told them, "We're going to camp here. This is the land that my grandfather promised me. My grandfather Rasulullah never breaks his promise. We have reached Karbala. Come down, my family. Come down, my companions. And let us build our tents." The Imam planted his tent. Sayyidina Zainab alayhi salam's tent was right behind the Imam's. Abu Fadl al-Abbas alayhi salam and the Banu Hashim, they had their tents around the women and children, and the companions had their tents around the Banu Hashim. And they built everything around the central tent of Imam al-Hussein in the shape of a crescent moon. In this way, they were able to keep the enemy at the forefront, whilst digging a trench from behind, so that they would not be attacked from the rear. So then the men began to dig a trench in the shape of a crescent moon, And the tents were inside, on the inside of the trench, and the army of Hur was opposite the Imam. He was with around 1,000 people at the time. Once Hur saw that the Imam had settled and that he had these 1,000 men with him, he told them to also settle their tents. And he wrote a letter to Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad in Kufa, telling him, Hussein ibn Ali has now settled his camp in this land called Karbala. What are your orders? Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad sent a message back, not to Hur, but to Imam al-Hussein. The messenger came to the camp of the Imam and handed him the scroll. The Imam took the scroll and he read. Ubaidullah says to Imam al-Hussein, Ya Hussein, I understand that you have now settled camp in this land called Karbala. I advise you to fall under the leadership of I and the leadership of Amir al-Mu'mineen Yazid ibn Muawiyah. And if you don't, then you and all of those with you will perish. So Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam threw that scroll away right in front of him. The messenger then asked the Imam, Sir, what do you want me to reply? And the Imam said to the messenger, He gets no reply from me. So he took the message back to Kufa. Ubaidullah, as he received the message, became infuriated and he went straight to the Masjid of Kufa and he called the people. He gathered the people of Kufa and he told them, Oh people, the enemy Hussein ibn Ali has settled camp not far from here. You know the generosity of Amir al-Mu'mineen Muawiyah and his son Amir al-Mu'mineen Yazid. And Yazid ibn Muawiyah now has sent me thousands of dinar and hundreds and thousands of dirhams in order to disperse amongst you. You know of his generosity and he will give you more for anyone who volunteers to go and fight Hussein ibn Ali. And so the people now realized. First, they were threatened if they did not fight against the Imam. Secondly, if they do, they're safe and they're rewarded. In the prisons were 4,000 to 5,000 mu'mineen of Kufa that were imprisoned. People that were trying to help Muslim ibn Aqil, people that were the true Shia of Imam Ali alayhi salam. But now people saw, okay, we have to join the battle against Hussein ibn Ali. Ubaidullah planted security forces at the ends of Kufa so that no one could escape and run away. And then he would take people, he would sign them up. People began to sign up to the army to fight Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. And thousand by thousand, Ubaidullah started to send them into Karbala. First, Umar ibn Sa'd went with a battalion of 4,000. He went towards Karbala and he joined the army of Hur. Now there were 5,000. Imagine being in the camp of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. You're sitting there and you saw 4,000 warriors approach. You already see 1,000 in front of you that you're about to do battle with. But you just saw them now multiply from 1,000 to 5,000 in a matter of a day. This was on the 3rd of Muharram. Then Shimr joined with another 4,000 from Kufa. These are all from Kufa. There were no soldiers sent from Sham. No one from Damascus. No one from Syria. These are all from Kufa itself. If there were people from Sham, there would be individuals that had come on their own. There was no official order from Yazid of sending an army from Sham. It was all from Kufa. So now they became 9,000. Thousand by thousand, they started to multiply, to increase in their hundreds, in their 50s, in their 10s. Ubaidullah kept sending them. He kept sending them. Every now and then, there would be a sincere individual in Kufa. There was one known as Ammar ibn Abi Salama. He tried to actually assassinate Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad, but he couldn't get to him. So he tried his best and he managed to escape Kufa. Some people managed to escape Kufa. A lot of them would run to the deserts. Thousands of them managed to escape. They would run to the deserts. They would run away. But the few individuals would run towards Karbala to join the army of Imam Hussein. This man, Ammar, he joined the army of Abdullah alayhi salam. So thousands were joining Hur and Amr ibn Sa'd and Shimr, and this one came and joined Imam Hussein. But it just goes to show you, this one is remembered for eternity, and all those thousands are forgotten and will live their lives in the pits of hell. So this one man is worth thousands of other men. He comes and he joins Abu Abdullah alayhi salam, knowing full well that he will die if they do battle, but joins him because he is with Haqq. So by the 6th of Muharram, the camp of the Ahlul Bayt look in front of them and they find that the enemy has reached a number of 30,000 warriors. Now we know that Kufa had overall 70,000 warriors. Overall, that's how much they would have. Now if we are to say that 30,000 were in Karbala now, 30,000 warriors in Karbala from Kufa, and we have about 5,000 in the prisons, that's 35,000 warriors. Where are the rest of them? We have 35,000 people missing. 35,000 soldiers missing. They could assist Imam al-Hussein. Where were they? Their answer is, many of them ran away. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad was sending thousands out. If he sent 1,000 out into Karbala, about 500 would reach and they would join the army of Hur and Amr ibn Sa'd. The other 500 would run into the valleys and the deserts. If he sent 10 people, only 2 or 3 would reach. If he sent 50, only about 10 of them would reach. They would reach and they would join the opposition. The others would run away into the valley. They didn't have anything to do with the battle. They were scared. Because Ubaydullah had everyone fearing him. He was a taghut, a true tyrant. Do you know what a tyrant does? The kind of fear that he instills in the heart of the people. When you're sleeping, you think of the tyrant. When you're at work, you think of the tyrant. You feel like he's a beast. He's coming to get you. He's the boogeyman. Everyone was scared of Ubaydullah. Ubaydullah had fathers working on their sons, and sons working on their fathers, and brothers working on their brothers, people working on their families, snitches. Everyone was very, very afraid, living in fear. Only a few people actually had the guts to stand up for the Imam. They were either imprisoned or they didn't make it to Karbala. Or there were those who made it to Karbala and were martyred with the Imam. Now, the people who stayed behind, yes. The people who did not help the Imam, they were people who loved the Imam. But love was not enough. Their love did not allow them to take the right stand. They were the goal of the Imam. The Imam wanted to come and show them true tashayyu. They were what, 5% Shia'i, 10% Shia'i, 40% Shia'i? They weren't complete. The tashayyu was not complete. But they were the goal of the Imam. That's why he was going to Kufa, to reset them and make them true Shia'is. But unfortunately, Ubaydullah's tactics of keeping the leader away from his people were working. And he had instilled fear into the hearts of these people. Now, when you look at the Battle of Karbala, you will see that actually only the frontliners hated Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. The frontliners were not Shia. The frontliners were the ones who hated the Imam. Some people say, they claim that the Shia, they killed Imam al-Hussein. This is incorrect. Anyone who says that does not know anything about history. The people at the front line, Shimr and the likes of him, hated the Ahlul Bayt. They were the ones that wanted the battle to start and they wanted to kill the Ahlul Bayt. But the ones who actually loved the Imam were either people who ran away, or even in the army of Yazid, the 30,000, they stayed at the back, at the top of the mountains and the valleys. They would watch the battle. They watched the battle, but they didn't get involved. They would watch the battle and they would pray, Ya Rab unsur Imam al-Hussein, Lord, please make the Imam victorious. Even though they could go and assist him and be in his camp, but they were too afraid. They stayed behind. And that choice of theirs cost them their akhirah. But the people at the front, the 500 to 1,000 people, are the ones who did battle mainly. That's why when Mukhtar al-Thaqafi, when he went and did his tahqiq when he was doing his investigation on anyone who was involved in the Battle of Karbala, he wanted any single person, every single person that contributed to the battle. The person who threw a stone, the person who threw a stick, the person who struck with a sword, the person who stole, the person, any single person who had contributed to the battle, Mukhtar wanted him. Who killed the camel of the Imam? Who cooked the camel after it was slaughtered? Each person was going to get their retribution that they deserved. They were going to see their end at the hands of Mukhtar. But Mukhtar only reached about 500 to 600 people. Those were the ones that were involved mainly in the battle. All the other people were too scared to come and kill Imam al-Hussein. They didn't want to. But they were also scared of Ubaidullah. So they joined the opposition army. And that's why Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, he called them هَؤُلَاء قَوْمٍ قَدْ كَفَرُوا بِإِيمَانِهِمْ. These people, they have disbelieved in their faith. Or when Sayyidah Zainab alayhi salam called them يَا شِيعَةَ آلِ أَبِي سُفْيَانِ. She called him the Shia of Abi Sufyan, not the Shia of Ali ibn Abi Talib. So even the Ahlul Bayt recognized that these people fighting us, they are not our followers. Unfortunately, there are people in the army that were meant to be our followers, that we were coming to save. They were too scared to be with the tyrant and they joined the opposition army. Others ran away. The Imam, on the other hand, as he was facing 30,000 warriors on his side, he had between, as we know, the famous number 72 and 100 warriors. So we have different narrations. But if we are to add up all the people in the Imam's camp, it would be about 100 with him, 100 soldiers with him. And so, as the days went by, the Imam saw that battle was coming closer. But Umar ibn Sa'd was hesitant. Everyone who Umar ibn Sa'd asked told him, don't do it. Don't go and fight the son of the daughter of the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ. Don't do this. Everyone he asked advised him against it, but he did it anyway. And when he took the leadership, he was so hesitant. He would stay up all night and would think to himself, should I kill him or should I not kill him? I know whoever kills Hussein ibn Ali will go to Jahannam, but the kingdom of Ray, there was a kingdom of Ray that was promised to him by Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad. A great land was promised to him, great wealth and riches. And so Umar accepted this delusion and he chose to take the leadership and fight against Imam al-Hussein. Ubaidullah especially wanted Umar to do it. He wanted Quraysh to kill Quraysh. He wanted it this way, even though people advised him against it. The Imam tried to talk him out of it. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam had a negotiation with Umar al-Sa'd. And he told him, he went and he told him, Ya Umar, reconsider what you're doing here right now. All these warriors behind you, take them back. And let me go to Kufa as a free man. But Umar ibn Sa'd told him, Hussein, I don't want to do this, but you know I have to do this. You know I am promised the kingdom of Ray. The Imam told him, you won't receive it. Trust me, he won't give it to you. And then Umar told him, but if I don't do this, he's going to destroy my home. The Imam replied, I will give you a better home. I'll buy it with my own money. Whatever you need, I'll provide for you. Just take the army back and let us go. Umar ibn Sa'd replied, but if I don't do this, he's going to come after me and my family. The Imam said, your family and you are under my personal protection. You have my word. I will guard you with my life. Just take the army back and let us move forward. Umar ibn Sa'd told him, I can't let you go. I have to receive my kingdom. So the Imam told him, you won't receive a thing. If this is the path you have chosen, Ya Umar, if this is the path you have chosen, you better be up to the responsibility, to the task at hand. Because you're not going to receive anything that you think you will. And indeed, the Imam's prophecy came true. When Umar ibn Sa'd returned after Karbala, he went to retrieve the paperwork from Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad in Kufa. And Ubaidullah told him, You get nothing from us. Umar ibn Sa'd couldn't believe it. He left the palace that night, utterly depressed, thinking, what have I done to myself? I killed the son of the Prophet, and I didn't even receive what I thought I would receive. He was finished. He didn't even live that long. But in any case, the decision he made was to take the reins of the leadership of the army in Karbala. And so the days began to pass, and it seemed like the battle was going to happen very soon. On the sixth day of Muharram, Habib ibn Mudahir, the closest companion of Imam al-Husayn, he said to the Imam, Ya Imam, my tribe, the Bani Asad tribe, they're not far from here. If you give me permission, I will use the night sky as a disguise. Let me go and talk to them and bring them back so that they may assist us in this battle. Imam al-Husayn told him, I give you permission. If you can go and get to them, go. So Habib waited until dusk. When the night sky came upon them, he went. Habib approached the Banu Asad tribe. Salaamu alaykum. Alaykum as-salam. Cousin, what do you need? So Habib told them, I have come to you, my tribe, with the greatest gift someone could come back to with his family. I have come to invite you to aid the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. He is now surrounded by a group of enemies leading up to a number of 30,000 warriors. And with him is only 100 warriors. But each one on his side is worth 1,000 warriors. And they will not give him up no matter what happens. They are staying by his side. So I have come to invite you and to advise you to join us in defense of the grandson of the Prophet, so that when we are raised on the final day, we are companions of the Prophet. When he told them that, many of them accepted. And as they began to get themselves ready, unfortunately, there was one of them who had gone off and told Umar ibn Sa'd that Habib had approached them. So by the time that Habib had finished his speech and people were accepting to go with him and organizing themselves and getting ready to leave to go and join the Imam, 400 warriors from the enemy forces had come. They had come and they had landed right in front of the river Euphrates. And they told them, you're not going anywhere. So Habib and the Banu Asad began a small skirmish. This was the first battle in the battles leading up to the final battle of Karbala. This was the first battle. Habib led the Banu Asad tribe against the 400 warriors by the river Euphrates. They fought, but the Banu Asad began to retreat when they realized the 400 were too many for them. So, one by one, they were retreating. Habib realized there was no one left. He had to find a way to get back to Imam al-Husayn without having died in that battle. And so he retreated. He found his way back to Imam al-Husayn and told them, they didn't let me bring back the Banu Asad tribe. And the Imam just looked at him and said, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-ali al-azim. There is no might except with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It looks like it's just us. The 400 men sent by Umar ibn Sa'd, they stayed by the river. And now they were employing a new tactic. They were not allowing the water to reach the camp of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. The water had run out in the camp of the Imam, and the throats became dry, and the children began to ask for water. Al-Atash, Al-Atash. They would come and they would ask their elders, we need water. And the Imam would look at the children and their parched throats and their dry lips. And so he went to his backbone and his spine and the general of his army. Ya Abbas, come, my general. I have a mission for you. Hussein alayhi salam told Abu Fadl, Abbas, the children want water. I want you to take our men and bring back water for our family and for our women and for our children and for our companions. Abu Fadl Abbas told him, Master, don't worry. I will bring back the water for everyone to drink. Abu Fadl then took the entire army. Abu Fadl Abbas and 100 men went towards the Euphrates. The 400 men had now increased to 4,000. They had reinforcements, 4,000 men guarding the riverbed. Abu Fadl stood there with the companions, and one of the companions by the name of Nafi', he told Abu Fadl Abbas, let me go and ask them peacefully first for the water. Abu Fadl Abbas told him, go. Nafi' went and said to them, we haven't had water to drink for the last day. It was now the 7th day of Muharram. He told them, we want to drink some water. And so the enemy forces told him, drink. Hani'an, you can drink. So Nafi' told him, I can drink? Great. I'm just going to fill my flask of water, fill these bottles of water, take back with me to the camp. They told him, no. Illa hadha. You can't do that. So he said, I can't drink if my master Hussein hasn't had anything to drink. They told him, Hussein won't drink. You can drink, but Hussein cannot drink. Imagine the hate. This man can drink, but the son of the Prophet Muhammad can't drink. He has to stay thirsty. Why the hate? Because he's the son of Ali ibn Abi Talib. So they told him, you can't drink. Nafi' said, I'm going to take the water back. They said, no, you're not going to take the water back. Abu Fadl Abbas then told Nafi', return. Nafi' came back. Abu Fadl split the army into three. He made sure that there was a right flank and a left flank. And then there was the core part of the army in the middle. Abu Fadl Abbas led the right flank, and the left flank was either led by Habib ibn Mudahir or Ali al-Akbar. The right and left flank would go and pierce the enemy forces. And when they were able to fill a hole in the enemy forces, Abu Fadl told the center army to go and fill up the water. And so they charged towards the enemy forces. Abu Fadl Abbas went in on the right flank and began to fight and pierce the enemy. On the left side, Ali al-Akbar alayhi salam and Habib ibn Mudahir, when they pierced the enemy, the middle of their army flew open. This was the opportunity now. The middle flank went in. And they all got their bottles out and their flasks out, and each one filled a bottle or two of water. And as Abu Fadl Abbas alayhi salam and the warriors held back the enemy forces, they filled the water and then they came back. No one from the Imam's army was killed on this day. Yet the forces of Umar ibn Sa'd had suffered great losses. Abu Fadl Abbas took all the water and brought it back. All the children were waiting. Sukayna, the daughter of Imam al-Hussein, was waiting. Qasim, the son of Imam al-Hassan, was waiting. The sons of Sayyidina Zainab alayhi salam were waiting. All the women were waiting. And the Imam looked on and smiled as Abu Fadl Abbas came back. Of course, without having had a sip of water himself, made sure everyone would drink. And they rationed the water for the next 2 days. They ran out of water on the night of Ashura. The night before the battle, the water that they had been rationing for the last 2 to 3 days had finally finished. But before that, Abu Fadl Abbas was known as the water bearer. Not because he went on the day of Ashura and stayed at the river. Because on the 7th day, he went and he brought the water back. On the day of Ashura, when the Imam asked Abu Fadl Abbas to go and get water for the children, it's because they had already seen him do it once before. The children really believed that he was going to bring the water back, because 3 days prior, he did. They had no reason to doubt him. Of course, after everyone had had their share of water, Abu Fadl Abbas alayhi salam drank. There was another controversy surrounding Abu Fadl Abbas, because Shimr ibn Daljawshan was actually his cousin. The mother of Abbas was Umm al-Banin. She was his aunt. She was Shimr's aunt. And so Shimr had sought permission from Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad with a scroll for safe passage for those who are related to him. And so he approached the camp of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam after the skirmish of the 7th. And he told them, "Where are my cousins, the sons of our sister? Let them come out." So Abbas and his three brothers, Ja'far, Abdullah and Uthman, they came out with him. And Abbas said, "What do you want?" And Shimr told him, "My cousins, come with me. You've been granted safe passage. You don't have to stay here. We don't want to fight you." So Abu Fadl looked at him. The brothers didn't say anything. They let their big brother Abbas speak. And Abbas told him, "You scum. You want to grant safe passage for us, but not the son of the daughter of Rasulullah? To hell with you and your safe passage." So Shimr was rejected. He stood there, upset, and then he returned angry that they had disrespected him in that way. But Abu Fadl Abbas and his brothers felt disrespected that they would even consider to offer them such a safe passage. Abu Fadl then returned to the tent and didn't say a word to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. The Imam let him do as he wanted there for once. On the 9th of Muharram, on the afternoon of the 9th before dusk, Umar ibn Sa'd began to organize his army. He organized the battalions. The men started to climb upon their horses as Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam watched on from his camp with his sword in his hand. He saw them begin to organize themselves. Abu Fadl Abbas alayhi salam came and saw that and then looked to Abu Abdullah and told him, "Sayyidi, it looks like they are about to attack." So Imam al-Hussein told him, "Ya Abbas, go. Be my representative and go see what they want." So Abu Fadl Abbas alayhi salam charged towards the enemy. 20 warriors followed him. Of them, Habib ibn Mudahir and Zuhair ibn Qayn. They kept going behind Abu Fadl until he stopped right in front of Umar ibn Sa'd and told him, "What do you want? What is it that you lot are planning right now?" And Umar ibn Sa'd told him that the order has come for us to either receive the pledge of allegiance to Yazid or to attack. And so Abbas told him, "Wait for me to go back and tell Abu Abdullah alayhi salam of what you have said." So Umar ibn Sa'd told him, "We await his reply." Abu Fadl Abbas sped to Imam al-Hussein and told him, "Sayyidi, they wish to attack." So the Imam told him, "Abbas, go back and tell them, if you're able to, push back the battle until tomorrow. Give us this night to spend with Allah in devotion and prayer. Our final night on this earth." And so Abu Fadl said, "I will go and tell them." He sped back and he saw Zuhair ibn Qayn discussing with Umar ibn Sa'd and the enemies. They seemed to be astonished that Zuhair was now with Imam Hussein, as if he was not of his followers. And they told him, "Are you not Uthmani? We didn't know that you were of the Shia of the Ahlul Bayt." And so Zuhair told them, "If you don't see me right now amongst them, is this not enough to tell you that I am from them?" Imam Hussein reminds me of our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. "And I will give my life for him against those treacherous souls like you who wish to attack him." At this point, Abbas approached and told them, "Umar, O enemy forces, Imam Hussein has asked for you to return on this day. And tomorrow morning, we will meet for battle, insha'Allah." And so Umar discussed with his advisors, and they said, "We accept the request. We will see you for battle in the morning." They returned to their tents, and Abbas and Habib and Zuhair and the 20 other warriors, they also came back to the camp of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam made this request for a very specific reason. He did not want this battle to play out the way in which his enemy wanted it to. It wasn't going to happen at the time his enemy wanted it to or in the place his enemy wanted it to. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam wanted to take control of his destiny. He knew that this was going to be the climactic battle of good versus evil. And he did not want it to be covered by nightfall. It was almost dusk. If it was to be fought in the nighttime, then all the stories of courage, all the stories of honor that we learn from in Karbala would not have been seen and witnessed by the people. The Imam wanted the sun to expose this grand story and this grand battle. He wanted to be the one who decided how the people would come to know of the way in which his blood was spilled into this fertile land. And so the night came. The night of Ashura. And this was the final night that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was going to live on this earth with his family. This was the most difficult night. The night when the destiny was finally going to be fulfilled. We have reports from Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam on the events of this night. When Umar ibn Sa'd returned to his tent, it was Maghrib time, and the Imam prayed with his family and his companions, the final Maghrib and Isha prayer. Then Imam al-Sajjad tells us, as he was sick and said Zainab alayhi salam was nursing him, he said, "I heard my father." Imam al-Hussein, he gathered all of his companions on this night. This night, which is unlike any other night. He gathers them all, they sit down. He looks at all of them in the eyes and he says, "There are no companions like my companions. And there is no family like my family. You have all been so loyal to me. And you have stayed with me throughout all this journey. And you're with me on this night. And tomorrow, nothing awaits us except death. So, my friends, I have a favor to ask you." And he says this with all seriousness. He wasn't testing them. He wasn't exaggerating. I want you to imagine his heart and how he was feeling on this night. He says to them all, "The night has come. هذا الليل فاتخذوه جملا." He says, "Take this night as a way to travel out and escape. You can leave." He says, "These people, they don't want any of you. They want me. So I will stay behind and you all go. And I don't want any of you to feel ashamed. I don't want any of you to hold the burden. You are all promised paradise with me. That's it, your taklif is done. You've been with me this entire time, that's what I needed. Now you can all go home. But you must promise me when you leave, each one of you take one of my family members with you." He was being serious. He told them, "Leave. I will stay behind tomorrow and I will fight. I will stay behind. Everyone here, use the night sky as a shadow, as a cloak, take one of my family members and leave. No one has to stay until tomorrow. They don't want you. They only want me. They don't want your necks. They only want my neck. They don't want your blood. They only want my blood. So all of you, you can leave." He truly forgave them. He truly gave them permission to leave. And as he was speaking, their faces were faces of grief, and their stand was amazing. Because as soon as the Imam finished his speech, Abu Fadl Abbas was the first to reply. And he says, Maybe the first time he ever disobeyed an order or a request. He said, لم نفعل. He said, I won't do it. أنبقى بعدك. Can we remain without you, after you? What life is there after you? He said, I won't leave. The Imam looked at his brother. Then he turned to his cousins, the sons of Aqil. He said, oh my cousins, Muslim has already given his life. You have nothing to be ashamed of. Take this night and leave. Only death awaits you tomorrow. Take one of my family members with you. And they looked at him and they told him, you think we will leave you? You think we will leave on this night and we would never have thrown even one of our arrows with you, or struck one of our swords with you, or tasted the swords with you? We won't ever leave you. We won't leave our master and our cousin. And we'll give our children for you, our money for you, and our lives for you. And then Muslim ibn Awsa just stood up. He said, Ya Imam, I won't leave until I dig my sword and my arrow into their chests. Even if I have no weapons, I'm going to fight tomorrow. I will fight with stones. I will fight with my hands. I will do everything I can in order to die by your side. I will never leave you. And then Zuhair ibn Qayn stood up. He said, my Imam, if they were to kill me and then burn me and then throw my ashes into the wind and then only for me to be revived once again, to be killed and burned and have my ashes thrown into the wind, to be revived and killed 1,000 times, I won't leave you. They all started to stand up. And each one would say, I will never leave. And I won't go. And I will never leave. You're not staying here by yourself. And the Imam would look around. And as he would see these brave men stand and tell him that they're going to give their lives for him. And then the Imam said to them, if you stay, you will all be killed to the very last man. And their reply came, what an honor it is to be killed by your side. And then you know what happened? A great event occurred. They brought joy into the heart of Imam al-Hussein. I don't know how valuable it is with Allah to bring joy into the heart of the Imam Masum. Because you know when he told them to leave, and he really meant it? If they listened and they took his family with them, and he had promised them paradise, it was done. They were promised paradise forever. If they left, he truly was going to stay by himself. But you know, there must have been something in his heart that would have felt, tomorrow I'll be alone. Tomorrow I'm going to fight alone. You know, if they went that night, how lonely that night would have been. Imagine Imam al-Hussein walking through the tents without a soul in sight, no companion and no family member. Imagine one man versus 30,000. And he was sitting there and ready for that loneliness. He was going to give himself. He was ready to give himself to the darkness of that loneliness, the wahsha. But they didn't let him. They truly brought him joy. They brought joy into his heart. I don't know how valuable that is with Allah, but he said, there are no companions like my companions. And then Qasim, the son of Imam al-Hasan, he came and he said, what about me, uncle? What about me? And so Imam al-Hussein looked at him and said, Ya Qasim, how does death sound to you, my son? Then Qasim told him, it is sweeter than honey. So the Imam said to Qasim, my son, you will be of the men tomorrow and you will die by our side just like young Abdullah, Ali al-Asghar. And Qasim said, they're going to kill Ali al-Asghar? And the Imam looked at Qasim and tears dropped down Qasim's eyes and tears dropped down the eyes of the companions and tears dropped down Imam Hussein's eyes. But then he told them all, my brothers, look up into the sky. And they looked up. And the veils were lifted. And the Imam began to show them all their positions in heaven. They could see the reality of paradise on that night. And he said, Qasim, that's your position. And Muslim, that's your position. Zuhair, that's where you are. Abbas, that's where you are. He showed them all their positions in the night sky as heaven was shown to them. Imam al-Hussein then left the gathering and was walking back to his tent to check on his family. Sayyidah Zainab alayhi salam was nursing Imam al-Sajjad, but she heard everything. And when she heard Imam al-Hussein approach, she ran out of the tent crying. She ran into the arms of her brother. And Imam al-Hussein embraced her. And Sayyidah Zainab said, I wish death would take me away. Today, Fatima and Ali and Hassan, they all die today. Because Ya Hussein, you're all I have left. You're all of them in one. When you go, who's left for me? And as she cried, the Imam told her, my sister, be strong for me. My sister, my father, and my mother, and my brother are all better than me. And even better than them was our grandfather. And death took them all. And death will take me. And death is promised to us. I need you to be strong for me. And I need you to promise me something, my sister. That if I am defeated in battle tomorrow, I don't want you to lose yourself over me in agony. Don't let your dreams perish. Keep your dreams alive for me. Zainab was listening to the words of her brother with tears rolling down her face. And then she told him, have you received the pledge from your companions? Do you trust them? I'm afraid everyone's going to leave you. And as she said that, one of the companions, Nafi', he heard. He overheard her telling him that. And then he overheard the Imam's reply. He overheard the Imam tell her, I offered them to leave, my sister. I told them to leave and take you all with them, but none of them were willing to let me go. But when Nafi' heard the fear that Zainab alayhi salam was experiencing, that they would be abandoned, he began to cry. And he ran straight to Habib ibn Mudahir, the elder of the companions, and he told him. And then Habib cried. And so Nafi' told him, Ya Habib, maybe there's something we can do. Maybe you can do something to ease the pain in the hearts of the women of Rasulullah. And so Habib said, I will. And he called all his men. Men, stand. Lions, he called them. Lions, stand. But he told the Banu Hashim, not you. My masters, not you. You rest. Don't stress yourselves. Rest your eyes on this night. This is for the companions. This is for the Ashab. We need to prove ourselves. We need to prove our loyalty. He gathered them all and told them that the women of Rasulullah were afraid that they would abandon the camp. And all the men said, if only Aba Abdullah would allow us to right now, our swords are ready. And so Habib said, follow me. And they all marched and they stood as a battalion outside the tents of the ladies. And they called out, O women of Rasulullah, we are here and we are your warriors and we are your soldiers. And we will give our very last breath to our very last drop of blood in defense of you and your children. Will not anyone harm you as long as we live? And so the reply came from the camps, from Sayyidah Zainab and the woman. As Imam Hussein looked on to his most loyal companions and to his family, he saw them reply. They said, O warriors of the women of Rasulullah, know that the women and children of Rasulullah and the women and children of Ali ibn Abi Talib are under your protection. And then every last man began to cry. And tears strolled down the eyes of Aba Abdullah alayhi salam himself. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin.